Hello, sports fans, and welcome to the latest installment of the UConn Pod. This is Amon Kidwai, manager of the UConn blog. I'm here with my usual trusty crew. Got Brenner Pizak in the house. What's up, Brenner?
Hey, guys. How are you?
And, of course, Tim Fontenot. What's up, Tim?
Hey, what's going on? How's everyone doing today?
We are doing well, Tim. We are doing well, especially after a really, really great weekend for UConn sports. We got on Friday night, we had the first night festivities for basketball. Always fun to watch. Always good to see Ray Allen up in there. Always good to see some dunking going down. We had the UConn men's hockey team open up their home slate with a 5-1 win over Arizona State. We'll definitely touch on that in greater detail later, of course, with Tim. But also, during all of that, we had Vance Jackson, depending on your source, a top 70 or top 50 player in the class of 2016, announced his verbal commitment to UConn. 6'7", 6'8", sharpshooter, was former high school teammates with Daniel Hamilton. Really, really big addition for this 2016 class, right, Tim?
Yeah, absolutely. Makes UConn a top three class, not just top five, like a lot of people are saying. It puts them up there with Michigan State and Duke, according to ESPN. This is such an amazing class now with Vance Jackson. You got Mamadou Diarra, you got Juwan Durham and Alterie Gilbert, and then you throw in Terry Larrier. This is a fantastic class. And I think the coolest part for me was that 5-minute stretch there with Vance Jackson committing, everyone at first night having a good time, and UConn scoring those two goals in 1 minute in the hockey game all at that same time. That was pretty cool to see. And this UConn class, just another testament to Kevin Ollie. He's been recruiting ever since he retired from the NBA, so he's got a 5 years of experience now. He's getting better and better. Another California coup going out. He got DeAndre Daniels. He got Daniel Hamilton. And now he's got Vance Jackson. And it's just a testament to what he's been able to do. Vance Jackson said that it feels like home at UConn. And it's kind of echoes what Alterie Gilbert said in Jeff Borzello's story the other day after the commitment. He said that Kevin Ollie, it's not just words with him. You really genuinely feel he thinks of you as family. He wants to get you to that next level. And the great thing about Ollie is, like I said, he's just out of the NBA. So he's still got all those contacts, all that networking still in the league, all people he's played with and been a player under. He's got all the connections that a player could need if they want to make it as a pro.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the fact that Ollie is so well revered and well respected in the basketball world, obviously going a very, very long way. So exciting to see this 2016 class turning out the way that it has. I think people were a little disappointed in the 2015 class. I was not among that group, Tim. I don't think you were within that group.
I love it.
Within that group either, but I think there were some people disappointed by it. You know, it was disappointing not to get Diamond Stone, the number one center in the country, for sure. I don't think there's anyone else who we really feel like, you know, UConn should have gotten there in that class. And then Jalen Adams and Steve Enoch are two very, very good players. I did think that 2015 class might have been, if we're talking about 1 year before the announcement of that class, I thought it might have come out a little bit better, but very, very pleased with how it turned out. And then now with this 2016 group, Mamadou Diarra, Alterie Gilbert, Juwan Durham, of course, including Terry Larrier in that, adding Vance Jackson, a sharpshooter, this UConn team is completely reloading. And Tim, you know, when you talk about that family concept, you know that Kevin Ollie means it the way that he talks, the way you know that he cares about the team and his players in a way that, quite frankly, you just don't hear or see from a Rick Pitino or a Jim Boeheim, you know, type who after a player declares for the draft says maybe he wasn't ready. You know, Kevin Ollie would never do anything like that. Among a whole, you know, litany of other things that I think are really making him appeal to these incoming players. And there's still one spot, there's still one scholarship open, I believe. So, you know, maybe he finds one of those 6'11" guys from a different country who's been playing soccer up until about 3 years ago and bring him over stateside and have one of those classic UConn project big men to round out the class, because right now it's chock full of star power.
Yeah, I wish a soccer team could get one of those guys right now, but that's a whole different story. To touch on your people's complaints about probably the weakness of the 2015 class, I really don't think that you can say that. You look at where this class was about a year and a half ago, around the time when UConn was winning the 2014 championship, I remember being down in Dallas, and one of the things I did with Mike Pang and my fellow writer of the Daily Campus and our photographer John Kulikowski one day, we sat in our hotel room and watched Prince Ali playing an AAU game, because at the time he was a UConn commit and he was the UConn commit. So everyone was really excited about him. Then he decides to back out and go to UCLA. And that was after Willie Jackson decommitted as well. And now he's going to Georgia. That's, you know, you think about it, that could have been the class, Prince Ali and Willie Jackson, neither of whom I think would have been a big time impact player coming in this year. Instead, you get Jalen Adams, a higher rated player than Prince Ali, basically the same position. And you bring in Steve Enoch, the local kid, the big man who really turned a lot of heads last summer. You went, came from what was kind of a okay sort of class to now a great class coming in. And it's two great freshmen and a couple of great, great grad student transfers.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned Amita Brima for the soccer team. Do we put him in at goal, or where do we use Brima if we put him on the soccer field?
Oh God, I wouldn't put him in goal. I think that Scott Levine is a fantastic goalie with a lot of experience working with some great goalkeepers like Tim Howard. He's really proven to be a great replacement for Andre Blake. I'd love to see Amita Brima get in there as a in the box on a corner kick. You know, he could be one of those late game target guys, and he's kind of pacey too. So he could be in there for a while as like a striker, maybe, like
Peter Crouch type, maybe.
Oh God, Peter Crouch.
One of my favorite players in all of sporting ever, really. But
yeah, it's unbelievable. I could see him being better than Peter Crouch. I think Amita Brima could go to the Premier League and be better than Peter Crouch. That guy is only good at putting the ball in with his head. I think Amita's fast enough and talented enough with his feet where, you know, he could probably dribble around Peter Crouch. I've seen Enosh Wolf dribble a soccer ball. I've seen him pull some spin moves, and I think that Amita could easily do that. And, you know, it makes me think about what Peter Crouch would be if he had never made it into the Premier League. And he was actually asked about that one time. My favorite quote of all time in sports, someone asked him, Peter, what would you be if you weren't a professional soccer player? And his response was, a virgin. at least he's being honest. I think, bully for Peter Crouch that it worked out for him. But I think that if you put Amita in the Premier League, he'd be a better player than Peter Crouch. There, I said it.
Yeah, well, it is important to keep it real. Good job. Good for Peter Crouch there. But going back to UConn men's basketball and men's basketball recruiting.
Yeah, while we were on that topic.
You know, this is all happening. You know, the success of this recruiting class, the success of the graduate transfer market, it's all happening with schools, you know, negatively recruiting about Kevin Ollie rumors to the NBA. And it's all also happening within the confines of the American Athletic Conference, where everybody told us our recruiting would take a dip. So no, and also no to both of those. And awesome, awesome future looking bright for UConn. Really, really great to see. And speaking of that American Athletic Conference, the Football League is starting to get a lot of respect nationally. Three teams in the top 25. We got Memphis at number 18. We've got Houston at number 21, and we've got Temple at number 22. They are all undefeated. And then we've also got very solid Cincinnati and Navy teams. Isn't this awesome, Tim?
It is awesome. It is so awesome. And I just want to say I told you so to everybody out there listening who's been complaining that the American Athletic Conference sucks, that we're never going to make it out of this conference and we're going to be miserable. Can we please go to the Big Ten, to the ACC? Everyone who commented on that piece I wrote where I said we're going to be all right in the American and that everything's getting better, everyone calling me an idiot, everyone calling me crazy. No, the American Athletic Conference is fine. It's getting so much better. You look at those three teams in the top 25, and then you mentioned Navy and Cincy. You got East Carolina. UConn's able to compete against BYU and Missouri. It's awesome. You've got at Memphis, the way they've played this year, incredible. That win over Ole Miss, who beat Alabama, they've got one of the best pro-ready quarterbacks in the country in Paxton Lynch. You look at Houston, Greg Ward is in the Heisman conversation. Brenner has some amazing numbers on him. Their defense is fantastic. Temple, that big win over Penn State to start the season, and they haven't stopped. They're rolling over everyone, even in the American. They're going to roll over the entire East and win the division. That Houston-Memphis game at the end of the season is going to be so much fun because, as Brenner was talking about before we started recruiting, one of them is probably going to go 13-0. Put an American team in the playoff. That would cause such a ruckus around the country. It would be so much fun. Let's do it.
I think it might be a little ambitious, but it's there's a chance. I mean, when you look at these, you look at these schedules, you see, like you said, the Houston and Memphis game. Those teams, they also have to play Navy, make it tough, probably be a tough game, but they have a chance to go undefeated. Look at these Houston Cougars, Greg Ward, 166.1 quarterback rating, 71.8% completion percentage, 14 rushing touchdowns, 9 passing touchdowns, and 2 turnovers.
Ridiculous.
2 picks. I mean, these are numbers that'll get you into the Heisman Trophy conversation. So to have a guy like this in the American was really out of the realm of possibility a couple years ago. And to have a win like Memphis had last week, also out of the realm of possibility. You have a team that beat Alabama earlier this season, comes into Memphis. They're up 14-0, ready to take them to the woodshed. And suddenly Memphis just stands their ground. The entire game changes, and they score 30 straight points unanswered. It's hard to believe that this is the same conference that everybody was ready to jump off a bridge over just a few years ago, and maybe for good reason back then. But as you said, Tim, you give them the time, you give them the resources, and you give them the talent, and suddenly with the television contracts that the American has, they're able to get talented players into this conference. I think you're seeing just a gigantic shift. And suddenly, in a college football landscape where Utah is ranked number one, hey, why can't the American have a team in the playoff?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, and we've only brushed a surface of what this conference can be. Houston has, I believe, 2 top 50 players coming in next year, 2 5-star players who are going to be incredible. They beat out the entire state of Texas for them. And it's going to keep getting better from there. People are going to see what Memphis is doing. And it should be said that not only did Ole Miss beat Alabama, Ole Miss really humbled Alabama. So Memphis showing they're for real. They're going to keep playing these big teams, getting these big wins. People are going to notice that. And you keep looking down the list outside of those ranked teams. Again, Cincinnati, very good. They always recruit well. They've got Tommy Tuberville there to do so. East Carolina, they're going to keep getting better, especially if they keep beating the ACC the way they do. UConn, obviously we talk about it all the time, recruiting better, getting better. They have a good coach in place. So this conference all around is going to keep getting better. And if this season is any indication, what can be better than this is really promising.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, that Ole Miss win is really the biggest win in the conference history. You know, the UCF win over Baylor in the Fiesta Bowl is big, but I don't think it carries as much significance for a variety of reasons. I think people saw it as kind of an outlier, and maybe rightfully so. But now you've got the American. It's looking good. Like you mentioned, Tim, both of us wrote kind of off-season pieces saying, cool it with the American. The conference is fine. And both of those pieces are holding up very, very nicely. A couple of numbers. The American Athletic Conference is 10-1 against opponents from Conference USA, MAC, Mountain West, and Sun Belt. 10-1. So clearly the best conference out of the remaining quote-unquote group of five. And then when we talk about the quote-unquote power five, the conference is 7-11 against the power five.
That's just fantastic.
That's really, really good. And then the other thing I'd like to add is that, you know, someone might be inclined to say like, oh, well, you're a UConn fan. Of course you are, you know, blindingly optimistic about the conference. No. If it really did suck, I think we'd be very forthright about it. I think many fans who feel that way, many, many UConn fans who do feel that way, are forthright about it. But what we have seen is that, look, there, you know, these teams, Houston is bringing in Tom Herman, the Ohio State stud offensive coordinator. SMU brought in Chad Morris from Clemson. You know, Tulsa brought in Baylor's offensive coordinator, Philip Montgomery. UConn brought in Bob Diaco, the 2012 Broyles Award winner. Like, these are really, really good coaches coming to the American, and that conference is clearly separating itself. And I would be very willing to say that this conference is terrible. We are above it. We do not. We need to get out as soon as humanly possible. But what the quality is showing us from a football perspective is that that's not the case. For where UConn football needs to go in the next 5 to 10 years or so, all of that can happen in the American Athletic Conference.
Just look at the top 25. You got 4 teams from the ACC, 3 teams from the American, 3 teams from the Big 12, 5 teams from the SEC, and that's it. I mean, those are the biggest and best conferences that you have, and the American has the same amount of teams in the top 25 as all those power conferences. So just if you look at the evidence, just look at the ranked teams. There's the same amount because the talent gap has shrunk considerably.
And hopefully in the future, the television deal gap will grow as well. But in the meantime, we'll just have to enjoy watching our hashtag American Rising.
Because think about the amount of, like you just said, the television contract. Think about the Big 12 television contracts and the SEC and what they're able to tell their recruits about who's going to be watching their games, how many national TV, big spotlight games that they have. And yet, even with those advantages, we're seeing the American right here hanging with all those teams.
Yep. Yeah, and I don't think if UConn fans had their way and we were in the Big Ten, the ACC, or even those dumb ideas about the Big 12 or the SEC.
Or dropping football and joining the Big East, the worst idea of all time ever that I hate so much more than anything.
Oh, my God.
That's not even an idea. That's something that needs to not even be. You hear that idea, you just start humming and you plug your ears, because that would be the single worst move in collegiate sports history to, in 2015, drop your football team.
Ideas like that are the reason why I don't read the Boneyard. Ideas like that are why I almost block people from Twitter on a daily basis. But it's just, it's insane to me. I don't think UConn would be able to get to where it needs to be if it was playing in those conferences. And, you know, I think they wouldn't have been able to build as well. They'd be able to say, hey, you can play in the Big Ten. You'd be playing against these guys on a nightly basis. But you wouldn't be able to get enough recruits to the point where you would be able to compete quickly with them. I think being in the American has been able to help Diaco build a solid team and a solid foundation where then you can go on to say, okay, now let's try to stick it to these guys. And they're going to keep getting better from that direction at some point soon.
Yeah, I think we saw some of those teams that did leave the Big East try and go too national too fast. And they're just kind of floundering in the basement of the ACC, Pittsburgh, Syracuse.
Even look at Maryland right now.
Well, yeah. Pittsburgh, you got to give them credit. They've turned it around. Pittsburgh's a little
bit. They sit in a talent pool that there's no reason they shouldn't be really good every year. But moving on, we've got Tim. Why don't you give us the soccer update real quick?
Well, things are starting to turn around for the men's soccer team. 2 wins in a row now after losing 5 out of 6, going winless through that 6-game stretch. UConn was able to beat Central Florida at home. It was a close game all the way through. Abdu Thiam scored again. He's having a fantastic freshman season so far. He put UConn up 1-0 early, but Central Florida came back in the second half, tied it up. And then on his birthday, Jake Nowinski, one of the captains of the Huskies, was able to score on a set piece late in the game, about 10 minutes left, and that got UConn back on track. It was a game they very desperately needed to win. Then they go down to Temple on Wednesday, which has the Owls have had a fantastic season so far. Really surprised a lot of people. Been nationally ranked. Been really recognized across the country. UConn gets the 2-0 win down there with 2 goals in the last half hour. Again, both of them coming from Abdu, really making a case for Rookie of the Year in the conference. They go to Tulsa on Saturday. That's going to be their last road game of the regular season. Then they come back for 2 against Yale and USF, who they played earlier in the season and lost last year when USF came up for the conference tournament semifinals. They beat us on penalty kicks, so going to be looking for a little revenge there.
Very nice. And how about the women's team?
Women's team's looking really good. Number six in the RPI right now at 14-2. They can make it 15-2 on Thursday night. Of course, we're recording this on Thursday afternoon. And right after this, I'm heading up to Moroni to check the Huskies out. They're taking on Houston. They've got Houston and SMU left with a chance to win the regular season crown. It looks like it's going to be them and USF really vying for those top two spots in the conference tournament. So after this weekend, after these two games, Thursday and Sunday, it's going to be postseason time for the Huskies. They go down to Dallas, where all the tournament games are this year. No home sites in the quarterfinals. Oh, just everything down in Dallas. Yeah, it's kind of lame. But that number six in the RPI is huge for them because, like I've said before, they had to go to Penn State in the second round last year, and that was just a tough out. They could have gone a lot farther last year, but playing at home for most of the tournament, they could really, really make a lot of noise.
Very nice. Good stuff. And while women's soccer is rolling, field hockey is rolling as well.
Field hockey keeps cruising. They are 15-0 now after beating Boston University 5-0, the day after beating Old Dominion 1-0. That was actually the first one-goal game since September 25th. And they just keep rolling over everybody. They haven't given up a goal since that Stanford game on September 25th, a 3-2 win. That was their biggest nail biter of the season. You know, they keep cruising like this. They're going to win that third national championship. It's going to be relatively easy. And the German girl, Charlotte Vetner, 28 goals, 11 assists. She's scored on 33% of her shots. It is ridiculous.
Kind of disappointed in that and just a 1-0 win over Old Dominion.
Yeah, I mean, Old Dominion's a good team, but hey, you know, it's crazy to look at these numbers right now. Someone was asking me about this the other day and just thought I was flat out lying. This is the goals statistics for UConn field hockey right now. They've scored 92 goals on 337 shots. They have given up all season, and remember, two of them against Stanford, 5 goals all season in 15 games on 73 shots. It's ridiculous. Shot percentage, UConn 27.3%. Opponents, 6.8%. Just absolutely ridiculous numbers.
Amazing, amazing stuff from the field hockey team. On a different playing surface, same sport, Ice Bus. Men's hockey Friday night opened their season at the XL Center against Arizona State, winning 5-1. To nobody's surprise, a lot of freshmen and sophomores were heavily involved in the scoring. Tim, what are your biggest takeaways from the Ice Bus season opener, home opener?
It's an interesting one because you kind of have to take it with a grain of salt, given who they were playing. Arizona State, as I've said many times, is going to be a very good Division I team, but this is their first year as a sort of independent. They're that half independent, half club hockey still. They actually are going home after 3 games in Connecticut to play Southern New Hampshire in club hockey. They had a really rough weekend. They lost 5-0 at Quinnipiac the day before playing UConn. Their goalie in that game, Rylan Pasevich, had to face 57 shots, made 52 saves. And then 4 minutes into the game against UConn, when he was supposed to be getting the full game off, he had to come in because the starting goaltender strained his Achilles on the opening goal for the Huskies. So that was a very tough situation for him to come into. He ended up only lasting about 20 minutes or so before they went to DJ Jacobson, their third string. And I asked the coach about it, Greg Powers, after the game, and he said, you know, I probably should have gone to DJ first because there was just no way Pashevich should have been in there for that game. And it really allowed UConn to take advantage. They had those two goals at the end of the first period, one on the power play, Spencer Noss ending up with two power play goals on the night. So they were able to get everyone involved. The freshmen really stood out as they did at Alabama Huntsville. But it was an interesting game to start the season with, especially now having to go up 2 games in a row against the national runner-up Boston University.
Yep, and that first one is going to be this Saturday at 4 o'clock in Boston. And when's the second one, Tim?
The second one is in Hartford on Tuesday. And this is actually a 2-game stretch that is going to be very fun to watch because UConn's best player so far this season, at least statistically, has been Max Letnoff, the highly touted freshman who has 6 points so far to start the season. He has the three or four goals and a few assists. He was supposed to go to Boston University. Some paperwork stuff, it didn't work out. He's now at UConn. So this is going to be kind of like Max against the school he was supposed to play for, what could have been. It's going to be really fun to watch. But BU, no joke, national runner-up last year, national championship contender this year, even without Jack Eichel. So this is going to be a tough way to start the Hockey East campaign.
Yeah, definitely will be a big challenge for UConn, but definitely worth noting that last year against that national runner-up, they were able to tie BU at home. So anything
they tied them at Aganis.
Oh, they tied them at Aganis.
It was the home game was the one where it was really close. It was a really close game for a while. Or BU had, I think it was like a 3-1 lead. UConn comes back, gets to within 4-3, I believe, or 4-2, something like that. And Jack Eichel took over, ends up with a huge goal and assist, I believe, down the stretch, and just kind of ruined UConn's night with 10 minutes left in the game. It was UConn was getting back into it, but the Terriers ran away at the end.
All right. So UConn was able to tie them on the road last year. So we do know that anything can happen, and that Mike Kavanaugh's squad has certainly done a very good job of playing up to its competition. At times. We'll move on, talk a little bit about UConn football. We had the homecoming game this past Saturday at Pratt & Whitney Stadium at Rentschler Field. UConn suffered an unfortunate 28-20 loss to USF. The Huskies were able to accumulate 528 yards of offense, not really able to manage a whole lot of points off of it, 20 in the whole game, really 13 in times that mattered, some really, really, really interesting play calling, and then also decisions about whether to go for it, go for a field goal on fourth down. Why don't we start with Brenner? What were some of your big kind of points of emphasis or takeaways from the football game on Saturday?
Well, guys, I think this is the first game this season that you had to be really frustrated if you're a UConn fan. It was very, very frustrating. So many mistakes. Like you said, 528 yards of offense. You scored two touchdowns. It's hard. It's hard to believe that that's even possible. You get into the red zone just time after time after time. Four times you're right in there, and you get two field goals. Now, how those plays are going to leave you scratching your head until the off season, unless you have a nice stretch here. You need to have a bounce back stretch in these next upcoming games, because this is the type of scary game that can send you into a tailspin. When you have success moving the ball and then you just make mistake after mistake after mistake, mental mistake. The play at the end of the half with Sheriffs, you have a timeout in the pocket. You have 8 seconds. And the only thing that you need to be thinking about is quick pass into the end zone. If it's not there, throw it away and we'll kick the ball. I mean, that has to be the only train of thought that you have going on there. It's so basic. And yet we end up with like a swing pass, which not only is the swing pass getting a little bit annoying as a fan of the team, because it is such a staple of the offense. It seems like every single drive we're just running a swing pass up there, and we're lucky that Arkell Newsome is able to make people miss and get 3 or 4 yards on it, because they're blowing it up in the backfield because they've seen the play over and over and over again. For us to call a swing, for Sheriffs to throw a swing pass there where there's just absolutely no chance of him even getting down before the time runs off, it was gross. It was just a gross ending to a first half, and sort of set the tone for what was the first game this year where I just had a bad taste in my mouth at the end of it. As far as the defense goes, I thought without Fatu Kasi, we just did not have the meat and the penetration up front to consistently hold down that run game that we talked about last week, guys, was going to be such a threat for USF with guys averaging 6 yards a carry in Marlon Mack and 5.5 yards a carry from the quarterback position. And we were able to hold them down. But as you talked last week, they're just one big run away from breaking it open. And we saw that with the 60-yard run from Marlon Mack. I think without Fatu Kasi, like I said, the penetration just was not there up the middle for the entire game. We sort of showed our lack of depth, and they really were able to just run their game plan on us. We had a couple, the long pass play is upsetting because with the defender right there ready to make a play on the ball, he can't get himself turned around, and that's a play that you don't like to see given up to a guy that's hurt. He had a wide receiver who's hurt coming into the game. He gets three touchdowns on you. Just, it's hard to watch. The Bulls scored, had 294 yards of offense in their final five possessions. 294 yards. We haven't seen UConn's defense get shredded like that in a long time. Even when they were giving up points to BYU, we all kind of talked about how it was the circumstances in the game, a couple crazy plays here or there kind of swung things. This was just a comprehensive beating that we took in the second half from the Bulls. And it was rough because UConn defense has always been our bread and butter. And we were really just torn apart there. The last thing that I wanted to say is Sheriffs. I thought that I liked how he used the running game. I thought that when they were in the man-to-man, I remember we talked last week, guys, about how we need to use that quarterback scramble when they're in man-to-man. And he used it 5, 6, 7 times. I mean, he picked up 100 yards on the ground. He was moving the ball. But when it came time to make the final play, we just seemed to shoot ourselves in the foot every single time. And I also thought that we needed to get the ball to Alec Bloom and Tommy Myers a little bit more on third down and in those crunch time situations. I know they had 5 and 3 catches respectively, but those were kind of at the end of the game in garbage time when it had already been decided. And throughout the game, there were multiple times when I thought that we needed to be looking at those guys, our big 6'6 receivers, give Sheriffs a target and convert those important third downs that we kind of just like fall by the wayside. So that was my overall take on the game. It was the first game where you really had to have a negative feeling coming away from it. Yeah, we saw Arkell Newsome still with 200 plus yards of offense playing a big time game, but just way too many mistakes. Not a vintage performance by any means by UConn.
All right, Tim, what were your biggest takeaways from South Florida?
I think Brenner really said it all. The thing that he said that really stuck with me was the lack of use of the tight ends. I feel like they need to be way more involved in the offense. It was some garbage time catches for them late in the game, but there was a stretch in the middle there where they weren't even getting looked at after the first quarter. And you really, like we were talking about last week with the ability for Alec Bloom to move the ball down the field and to get Tommy Myers involved, especially down in the red zone, they need to take advantage of that. You can't have 528 yards of offense and 2 touchdowns. That's terrible. That's for as good as the offense looked in the middle of the field. To me, that was one of the worst offensive performances I've seen in a long time from them, because that was just so many wasted opportunities, so many points left on the board. I counted at least 14 to 18 points they left on the board there. They need to do better. They may have just cost themselves a bowl bid this year, which is crazy that would be considered a disappointment now this season, but that's where we're at. They had such a great start.
Yeah, absolutely. No, that is where we were, and you're right. I mean, there's the very first drive of the game. You could have at least gotten 3 points there. There's the end of the half. You could have gotten at least 3 points there. There are other times where you're within the 10, within the 20. Ideally you can put it in the end zone and get 7. So definitely a lot of points on the board. But I do not want to look past the fact that statistically, yardage-wise and all the other things, they were able to move the ball, just not kind of in those zones where it mattered. And I touched on it a little bit in my article on Wednesday, but I'm just so surprised that we're not taking those 6'6" wide receivers, in the red zone, those two guys that since before the season, Bob said we were going to see a lot of Aaron McLean and Frank Battle. Why don't we have those guys in there, and why aren't we throwing jump balls to them in the red zone, especially when it looks like, the only other plays we're running are Ron Johnson down the middle and something happened with those taller guys take advantage of that height mismatch, compared to corners and linebackers.
Yeah, they really need to start looking at the tight ends more just throughout the game. I mean, as a I've said this before as a Patriots fan. I love when the tight ends get involved. For us, it always works out well. But looking at the wide receivers, I think it's interesting going into the Cincinnati game this week that Thomas Lucas has been dropped down on the two deep, where the number two wide receiver spot now looks like it's going with Tyreek Beals or Hergy Mayala. So that's Diaco really sending a message that these guys are going to be more involved in the offense. They're going to be guys that are producing, and we've seen them be dangerous threats already this season. So this is good to see.
Yeah, and I was at a practice on Tuesday. Hergy Mayala, I mean, he's been looking good. He's been kind of affirming what we've heard about him, but he had an incredible day of practice on Tuesday, running with that first unit, catching everything thrown his way, and he's got a little bit bigger frame than Beals does at about 6'2"-ish. So I think, yeah, you know, opposite Noel Thomas and with Beals in the slot somewhere, and then the tight ends, you know, hopefully having a more legitimate threat there at the number two, you know, we'll open things up a little bit. And then, you know, the other takeaway, well, two other takeaways, again, something else that I touched on in my article was that, A, it's great to just be talking about football, you know, talking about why not do this more, what's with the swing pass, you know, versus like, oh my God, this team is terrible. Will they win another game? Will we win a single game next year? Should we drop football and join the Big East? All of these things. I'm sorry. But anyway, no, you know, the hopelessness of, you know, losing to Cincinnati 44-3 or whatever that score was. I don't remember anymore. Arkell Newsom being blown up and fumbling, you know, as soon as the handoff comes in. Laters, all of those things. We're not talking about how terrible this team is. We're talking about all the things this team could have done better. And I think that's a really good sign of progress. And then when you talk about the UConn-USF series, it was just exciting to see a solid-looking football game with talented people, with big plays, with points, with both teams scoring 20 points or more, which hadn't happened in the series in a while. And I think even this game surpassed the total scores for the previous two games combined. So just in general, at the very least, a much more entertaining and real football game that we got from the Huskies.
Yeah, and I mean, you look at a couple of these UConn-USF games from the past, and they've produced some of the iconic moments in UConn football history, mostly the Dave Taggart field goals in 2009 and 2010. But they've been terrible, terrible football games. UConn had to rely on 250-yarders in that game to clinch a spot in the BCS. Like, they couldn't move the ball. Neither team could move the ball. It was really just atrocious football all around. I remember, you know, being on campus for that and being on a college campus where a football team was looking really lackluster. People needed to drown their sorrows. Even when we went to the Fiesta Bowl, it was still ugly. So, I mean, it was nice to see. I was really impressed with the way USF played. They're definitely going to get better as years go on. I think if they stick with Taggart, they could really do something good and start competing the way UConn's rising up to the level of competition in the American. So we'll see what happens. This could really be a game worthy of a trophy.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. Someone on Twitter made a good one. It was the civil dysfunction or something like that, with dysfunction spelled incorrectly, so that you got the SF in there. I thought that wasn't bad.
No, that could be not just football, but UConn USF in general. Because I mean, you look at football games are always ugly. The basketball games are awful. Awful. Yeah. Awful basketball games. I can count many games in the last 8 to 10 years or so between UConn and USF that have gone to overtime when they shouldn't have, that have been far too close for comfort for neither team. UConn's looked terrible against the Bulls so many times. And then in soccer, the two can't beat each other in regulations. They always go to penalty kicks in the tournaments, and it's awful, usually more awful for UConn. But just all around, UConn-USF is ugly.
And what a great series to be the headliner of the new American Conference.
couple of the last kids picked from the old Big East or even the undrafteds. Moving on, though, we've got Cincinnati this Saturday. Team still for sure. I mean, those three losses have all come to really good teams: Temple, Memphis, and BYU. You know, you can certainly excuse a team for having those three losses, and then they've beaten. They have a good win over Miami of Florida. And then their other two opponents, one's an FCS and the other was Miami, Ohio, actually. So we've got a pretty good Cincinnati team. They are kind of exactly who they've been in the past few years. Offensive juggernaut, defensively generous. Tim, your thoughts on the matchup this weekend?
This is going to be an interesting one because, as I've said for many weeks, this is a game UConn could steal. But Cincinnati has been pretty impressive. That win over Miami was the Miami, Florida, of course, the once premier program, was huge. They have really impressed in a couple of, like, mainly in the Memphis loss, I should say. That was a weird game. That was a really weird game because Gunnar Kiel went out early, got hurt. It looked horrific, and he hasn't been playing since. But Hayden Moore comes in off the bench in that game and goes 31 for 53 and sets a school record with 557 passing yards, four touchdowns. He got two touchdowns again the next week against Miami, but he came back against BYU and was 15 for 30 with only 219 yards and no touchdowns. He's done a good job, though, and we don't know who we're going to see on Saturday. It could be Hayden Moore. It could be Gunnar Kiel. But they've got a great wide receiver group around those guys. They've got some pretty solid running backs. Defense is the only question mark with them. They've given up a lot of points. They actually haven't given up fewer than 30. I should correct myself there. They gave up 23 against Miami. But other than that, they've given up 34, 33, 53, and 24, or 38, I'm sorry, in their games that haven't been against FCS opponents. So if UConn can figure out that whole scoring thing, they've shown that they can move the football. They can really cause some damage over at Nippert.
Brenner?
All right, yeah, I would have to agree with you, Tim, that I think this is a game that UConn has the potential to steal. If for no other reason that I think Cincinnati's defense, you have to say it is vulnerable just with the sheer numbers that they've given up. I mean, give it up over 50 points to Memphis, over 30 to BYU, 38 to BYU, and they were moving the ball at will for portions of that game. They even gave up over 30 points to Miami of Ohio. So I think that if UConn is going to be in a position to win this game, it's going to have to be with the offense. It's going to have to be not only – we're not going to need – let's say 528 yards of offense, but we're going to need efficiency in the red zone. Like you talked about earlier, Tim, we can't leave those points on the board. UConn has to get out there in the red zone. When we move the ball in the red zone, we have to score touchdowns. Can't settle for field goals. We're not going to win on the road here in this game with field goals. We need to get in the red zone and convert those opportunities. And I think, as we were talking before, that's where we can use Alec Bloom, Tommy Myers, and even Tyreek Beals, as you said. With him moving into the slot, maybe we spread it out a little bit in the red zone and go three or four wide rather than just going with a tight set and keeping it all packed in. Then we have the option of maybe a run, a little draw play with Arkell up the middle because the defense is more spread out. And I think that Beals can get that quick. He is really quick. And as long as he is looking for the ball, not like last week when it hit him in the head, I think that he can get open quickly in those tight areas and give sheriffs another option. So I really think that, especially not knowing the status of Fatu Kasi on the defensive side of the ball, I think he's just absolutely the linchpin of that defense. So as we saw last week, I don't think you can expect the same effort, the same type of performance from them without that stud in the middle causing up all the commotion and the pressure, and he's clogging those running lanes, and he's just a beast to move for 60 minutes. So I think without him on the defensive side, which is looking more and more likely that he's not going to play, UConn's going to need to get it done on the offensive side of the ball. Sheriff's is going to have to take care of the ball, no silly turnovers. And basically, I think we're going to ride Newsom. We're going to ride him in between the 20s. And then when we get down into the red zone, we got to make plays to win the game.
Yeah, I think, Brenner, you said it all here. You know, the thing is, Cincinnati's going to put up points no matter what, whether Foley's in there or not. But with him out, it makes it even more difficult for UConn to stop them. Like I said, they've got two great quarterbacks. They've got talented wide receivers, but Teon Green leading the way in the backfield is gonna be able to get some big yardage, especially if Fadakasi's not in there. So the offense really does need to capitalize. There can't be any more excuses. They have shown they can move the ball. They just have been giving everybody headaches when they get down into the red zone. So that has to stop.
Yeah, and I think if you're going to beat this Cincinnati team, you're going to have to make a few stops, though. You know, like, you're just – it's if it's a UConn team where our strength is defense and they're all about playing and winning in shootouts, I just don't know if we can win a shootout with Cincinnati. So no. That's why I'm starting to think that if UConn's going to have a chance, you know, even without Fatukasi in there, it's going to have to be with stout defense, which then makes it a concern, because our secondary, I think, is relatively untested. And then I think with these types of offenses, like we saw against BYU, you know, you want to play aggressive, you want to blitz, you know, you want to play press coverage on the outside, or turnover causing plays defensively dialed up to make that happen, because they're going to have to disrupt and take Cincinnati's offense out of rhythm if they're going to win this game. UConn can't win this game in a shootout. UConn can't win this game 42-35. You know, we have to really hope that Cincinnati, that we hold Cincinnati's scoring. And I think UConn can do that. I think when Cincinnati has faced better defenses, you know, they have been met with some sort of force that can stop them. So we have said, yeah, UConn could steal this game, you know, which is kind of our nice way of saying we probably think they'll lose. With a 13-point spread going into this one, you guys feel like taking the points?
I think the problem for me with this game is if UConn can still limit them, for sure, but there's limiting Cincinnati's offense, which has scored more than 30 points per game in the majority of its games, and UConn's offense improving so much so that it can overcome the fact that outside the UCF game, which don't even count the UCF game because that's one of the worst football teams that we've seen in years.
Right.
The 20 points they got against USF was the most they've gotten since the Army game. Can they make up all of those points that they keep leaving on the board? I don't think they can. I think 13 is kind of a fair spread in this game. I would have a hard time taking UConn to cover it. I'm not saying it's not doable, but I wouldn't put money on it.
I agree that a 42-35 shootout is, I mean, UConn's not going to win that game, but the best way to relieve the pressure on the defense is to get a nice early lead. You know, if we could get an early score, get a 10-14 point lead, then you put your defense in a position where they can pin their ears back and actually create some pressure, where maybe in a more neutral scenario they're not able to do so. So I think that getting ahead, getting a lead, holding a lead, and then maybe your bend but don't break style defense that we like to play, they start to press. You get a lucky turnover. I mean, that's kind of like the route you're going down. And when you start talking like that, it's probably hard to take the points when it's still under two touchdowns on the road. So I think I would lay the 13 with Cincy if I was betting. And just at least I would have I think UConn has a better chance of beating Cincy here than they did at beating BYU, and we saw that they were right in that BYU game. They really were. They surprised us, and a couple changes on defense could have been the difference. Like we said, no press coverage. Maybe they learned a lesson, and maybe they try that this time. Or, you know, we could just – most likely we'll just play the Bob Diaco special, like you said, bend but don't break. But I think they'll be in the game. 13, it's going to be very, very, very close, but you could. It's just too easy to see a 14-point loss, you know? Just a nice classic 14, two-touchdown loss, and then you don't cover.
Or to see exactly like the BYU game where they keep it close early and then falter late. Yeah. And
then there it goes.
And things all of a sudden get out of hand. So we got the Cincinnati game, 4:30 p.m. this week. It will be on CBS Sports Network for those of you watching at home. At the same time, Tim will be in Boston at Aganis Arena watching the Ice Bus take on BU. So
that's right.
A couple of interesting things going on for the weekend, including pretty important football game, but aren't they all? We'll move on. Thursday afternoon, the UConn blog released its big annual American Athletic Conference men's basketball preview.
I'm not exhausted right now or anything.
It'll be a interesting season, to say the least, in the American. You've got this SMU team that everybody really thought would be the class of the conference. But now they're you know, they've got a postseason ban, and who really knows kind of how that plays out within the locker room. It's not every team that can go out and win 20 games when they're banned from postseason play. And then you've got a good, you've got your kind of solid guys who you've always had every year, your UConn, your Cincinnati. And then you've got some up-and-comers. You've got Tulsa, Temple, maybe no one else. Maybe someone can surprise us. Who knows? Tim, why don't we start with you? Let's talk about how we feel like this top of the American Athletic Conference is going to shake up.
Yeah. I was actually in the minority here. The UConn blog did declare among its 9 voters that UConn will be the regular season champion. The lowest anyone had them was 2nd. I was among that group of 2, me and Caveh Jam. I said UConn would finish 2nd behind SMU. I really think that the Mustangs are going to come out and have a really good season, all things considered. It's going to be tough losing Larry Brown for those 9 games, but I still see Nick Mort, who was named the Player of the Year in our preseason ranking, a unanimous all-conference selection. He is the best player in this conference, without a doubt. He's going to have a fantastic year. He's such a great leader on that team. We saw what he did for them last year, helping them win the conference championship, sweeping, really, actually, and getting them into the NCAA tournament. They could have gone so much farther than they did. That UCLA game was insane. They do lose 2 big pieces, Yannick Morera and Ryan Manuel. Even Cannon Cunningham was a really big impact player. But they bring in some really good talent with Shake Milton. Ben Amelogo can step into that position that Manuel is leaving empty. Sterling Brown is back. Marcus Kennedy is going to have a fantastic year. I have him in my all-conference team. Still got Ben Moore there. I mean, they've got the talent to really go far. I mean, I really think they can win the regular season title, especially since that's all they have. UConn putting them 2nd. I actually was just looking at the comments that we've gotten already on our prediction, and someone was saying, how can you predict UConn to win the national championship but only have them 2nd in the regular season? You know, UConn doesn't usually win the regular season in any year. Even when they were in the Big East, it didn't happen. I mean, not normally, but they were always better come postseason play. And I have them 2nd. You know, it's not that big of a difference between UConn and SMU. I think that UConn overall is the best team, but I also have watched UConn play for enough years that I know that they're going to lose a couple of those games that they should win. They'll probably be in the mix in an interesting game against Tulane. East Carolina will probably give them a headache or two. So, you know, I know how this goes. I still think they're going to finish 2nd. I think they're going to win the conference tournament. And then when they get to the
to the NCAA tournament. You know, this is UConn the year after going to the NIT. They're going to be pissed, and they're going to go in, and I think that they can absolutely win the national championship. So don't tell me I don't have faith in this team.
Yeah, I mean, you don't – you
pieces coming in that you don't know how they're going to mesh together.
So my justification for having SMU lower, third, I believe I put them.
Yeah, you were one of three to put them third.
Yeah, you know, well, I think that the postseason, like I said, kind of implied earlier, I think that postseason ban, you know, has an effect where it's kind of hard to get a sense of what exactly it is you're playing for when there's no postseason. Yeah, you're right. They can win the regular season title, but that's really it. And let's say that for whatever reason that leaves the equation, then what do they have? They're not, you know, they're not really. There might be a stretch of the season where they're not playing for that. And then, I mean, I looked on some of their numbers from last year. They're replacing something like five out of their top seven scorers from last year. And Keith Frazier being ineligible is a big issue, I would say, you know, losing him from the team. And I just don't – I just think there's a lot of distractions and all that, you know, other jibber-jabber that people like to say. And so – that was kind of my reason for it. And then looking at Cincinnati, I think they're just going to be one of those really strong teams that wins a lot of games, 44-40, and you know, no one gets too excited about it, but they keep winning games. They keep really frustrating, offensively oriented teams. You know, they have always been solid. So. I just like Cincinnati a little bit better because they have a lot more to play for. They have a lot more talent returning. So that was my kind of what I was doing.
I was saying I have to agree with your take on SMU there, Mom, because just psychologically there is something to be said. You might lose that edge, you know, that edge where the game's at its last, you know, it's at the deciding moment and you don't have that extra gear to go down and get it knowing that the ultimate prize is there, you know, and this game might cost you the chance to get there. When you don't have that extra bit, there's just a little bit of a psychological edge that I think you lose, that mental edge. So I also would say third place for SMU, and I would not be shocked or blown away if they were in fourth. Behind Tulsa. I think with James Woodard and Shaq Harrison, they could have another really good season, and this time actually get into the tournament if they finish a little bit more consistently down the stretch. Like you said, with Cincy, just a big, strong front court makes it really tough for the teams in this league to match up against them on a nightly basis and try to out-rebound them and outwork them. And get good shots every time down the floor. I think Cincinnati's primed for another good season. I also think they're better on offense this year. Troy Culpain is improved at the point guard spot, and I think he's more of a playmaker now. I think with all that being said, you still got to look at UConn. We're the UConn blog, and when you have a team as talented as this coming in, I think you have to go with UConn first. Sterling Gibbs, look out for him. That's my bold prediction. Is I know there's a lot of talk, obviously, rightfully so, for Nick Moore about preseason player of the year, but look out for Sterling Gibbs with what he did last year, coming into a more talented team and a team where the defense doesn't get to solely focus on him when they have to deal with Daniel Hamilton, who was the only freshman in the country to have 300 points, 200 rebounds, and 100 assists. I think that he could be primed for a really big year. So look for Sterling Gibbs to have just a gigantic season for UConn this year.
Yeah, I definitely don't disagree with either of you guys. I think UConn's going to have a monster season. I really, again, back to the championship conversation, I think it's not out of the realm of possibility. With SMU, just to touch on that nothing to play for conversation or the prize not being there, I think that with – you know, in those late-game situations, the guy on the ball is going to be Nick Moore, who's a senior this year, who has done so much to help raise the level of prestige for the SMU program. I think him going out on a high note, he's going to give it all every game. He's the kind of guy who's going to go even harder this year, I think, because of what happened this offseason. But, you know, we'll see what happens with them. It's going to be interesting. As for Cincinnati, love Cincinnati. This is a team that even last year took undefeated Kentucky almost to the wire in the NCAA. They're another year older. I think they can make a deep run in the NCAA tournament. I think they're good enough. I think Mick Cronin being back for most of the season this year is going to be a very big help for this program. You look farther down, though, I think everyone in the – most of the staff is in agreement that it's going to be a three-bid conference this year with UConn, Cincinnati, and Tulsa. A couple shouts for Temple. They could have a chance, but it's going to be tough to replace Will Cummings. If Quentin DeCozy steps up, then maybe – Fran Dunphy usually gets the best out of his players, but the team that is going to be a disappointment this year, and I'm glad that most of us were in agreement on it, is Memphis, who is the preseason number 6 in our poll. No one had them higher than 6. Some people had them even lower, around 7 or 8. Actually, I should say 2 people had them 5th. The majority had them 6th, and then a couple of people had them 7th. They lost Austin Nichols, who transferred to Virginia. Kedron Johnson could be out for the season. He's dealing with a shoulder injury. So there's going to be a lot of pressure on Dedrick and KJ Lawson coming in. The Memphis natives, the twins, Dedrick was our rookie of the year, and I think most of us gave him the nod only because he's going to be filling in right away for Nichols. Otherwise, we'd give it to Jalen Adams probably. I really don't see them being able to overcome Nichols' loss this season. They still got Shaq Goodwin, which is a good thing, but I don't see them really making any noise. I think it's going to be a tough year for them. And, you know, Josh Pastner, if he's not already, could end up on the hot seat. He had a really rough offseason.
Yeah, he definitely did. And there was some, I forget the exact details, but there was some shiesty business with the transfer of Nichols and something about timing of making the announcement. And, of course, as usual.
Well, it came out of nowhere.
Schools that he could go to and not go to, and something else too that I'm forgetting, but some dicey business there. And the weren't the Lawson twins, it wasn't like their AAU coach or father or something hired by the program as an assistant coach.
Yeah, wasn't their father, I believe, was hired as a coach, yeah.
So just some unusual dealings, and I guess Memphis is more of a football school now.
Yeah.
So
between those things, then you add in the transfers of Nick King, Cookie Powell. There's
And losing Nichols. Losing Nichols is a big loss. That was the best player on their team last year.
Yeah, he was a UConn killer, so.
So why don't we switch gears a little bit within the conference? There's this big, large, ugly basement. How about this question, Tim? Who are you most optimistic about in that bottom four?
In that bottom four?
Bottom four or five.
So we're going to ignore... if we're going bottom four or five, I'm going to say Houston. I do like the future for the Cougars. I don't think that they're anywhere close yet, but they're going to get there. They can definitely improve, and they're going to improve, much like the rest of the basement, but at a faster rate, I believe. Other than them,
crickets, yeah.
Yeah, I guess after Houston, I'd say UCF, mainly because, you know, it's going to be fun to watch them as kind of this marvel of genetics sort of thing, I guess, with Taco Fall and Justin McBride. Just these two massive human beings. One a 6'10", 325-pound military weapon, and the other this super tall, ridiculous thing named Taco. Like, that's just, for me, that's all you really need out of UCF.
Taco Fall is 7'6".
Yeah. He's tall.
So paired up with... Justin McBride up there in that front court, that's
good
dangerous.
UConn has a couple of perimeter shooters. You're going to have to. You're not going to be able to really go to the lane against them.
Yeah, he would actually eat Amita Brima, and we're not just saying. I think he might eat him.
Well, he would have a meat of Brima as an appetizer because, you know, there's really not a whole lot on a meat of Brima's bones.
And then I will never forget the UCF game 2 years ago. That's the thing. You can't.
Didn't he also fall? I'm pretty sure I remember this really loud boom when he hit the floor, and everyone around me was just like, holy shit.
Yeah, that's a big dude. You can't be pushing three bills and playing Division I basketball, you know, for 30 minutes, you know, or get that kind of playing time. So
I will say he is one of the nicest guys you'll ever meet. I'll never forget this. The conference tournament this past year in Hartford, I was watching UCF play East Carolina. It was a little while before the big games were getting started, and I saw my buddy Brendan in the student section, so I went over and I sat with him. We were just sitting in the front row there, just kind of having a good time, whatever, and there was a foul shot on the hoop right in front of us, and McBride is on, he's down low, and he looks over when my buddy yells at him, because my buddy loves Justin McBride, and so he looks over and gives a smile, starts talking to him, asks him who he wanted to win and all that stuff, and I'm just like, this is the coolest.
Nice guy. Yeah. That is always good when they don't think that they're super duper stars and God's gift to the world. And
well, it's UCF. The only time they've ever had something like that even remotely close for basketball was Isaiah Sykes and Michael Jordan's kid.
Willing to talk to us normies. Brenner, do you have a unheralded favorite in the American Athletic Conference? Someone from that basement who might take a step up?
Yeah, I think USF. I think that they're getting very little respect across the country, almost unanimously from what I've seen around picked last. But I think that with Orlando Antigua, they've actually brought in some pretty decent talent. I think that Chris Perry, junior forward this year, if he stays healthy, he could have a big season. I think he's got some talent, and I think that they play like an up-tempo athletic game, and I think that's good in today's game. So look for USF Bulls with Orlando Antigua. I think he's got a little something as a coach. He's got the connection to the kids today. I think he's going to start showing some pretty good recruiting classes, and you know there's a lot of talent in there down there in Florida to pick from. I think that USF, look for them to not be the basement dweller this year.
I was just gonna, obviously Orlando Antigua has the experience too of coaching under John Calipari, so he was really big part of everything Calipari was doing at Kentucky. He can bring that experience to USF, and he has already. I think he's starting to bring in some pretty solid recruiting classes. Kind of a three stars all around right now for them, but they're going to keep improving, especially like Brenner said, in a hotbed like Florida. You're seeing guys from four-star, five-star guys from the Florida area going into the American. Think of someone like Dang Reak at East Carolina this year. Gives them a little more height. He was at Victory Rock, where UConn is actually looking at Gorjak Gak, someone we mentioned earlier in the show. Everyone else in the country or in the conference is going to be looking to Florida. If USF can lock that down, they're going to be tough in a few years.
Yeah, and I agree. I think I like Antigua, as you mentioned, Tim. His background with Kentucky and Calipari. Before that, he was an assistant at Pittsburgh, I believe. Also did some time with the Harlem Globetrotters. You know, always good for driving legitimacy. Played at Pittsburgh. So and you're right. There is something about his attitude. I remember, you know, seeing him at American Athletic Conference Media Day last year. Just something about his attitude seems like he had a good sense of it all, and you know what all is going on there. So I see some upside as well with that USF program. Hopefully they can reach that potential because the conference really needs it. You know, it's something that we've talked about in football, hashtag American Rising. The football conference, you know, doing a really, really impressive job this year, and hopefully the basketball conference can take some of that good mojo and also help build on that, because even though basketball, as we are told, as we are led to believe, does not drive the realignment wheel, you know, it still is by far the number two revenue college sport. You know, still March Madness, the biggest time, you know, one of the most popular sporting events of the year. So you want to be a player in that. You want to have more consistent presence in the NCAA tournament. You know, I think when we were talking about beforehand, you know, having two bids last year sucked.
Yeah.
You know, and having Temple snubbed, in my opinion, having Tulsa not really truly being considered sucks. It's just one of those things where, you know, hopefully that basement can lift themselves a little bit so that our RPIs look better, so that more teams are getting in the tournament and that kind of thing.
And maybe that Cincinnati game against Kentucky in the tournament will go a little bit of a ways towards adding some legitimacy to the conference, you know, and show that not only was UConn national champ in 2014, now we have another team the very next year where it was thought that American was on a way downside, and here comes Cincinnati, who wasn't even blowing through the American, and they're able to hang with the undefeated team right up until the final seconds of the game. So I think that there is reason for optimism when it comes to American athletic basketball for sure.
Yeah, I think the problem is right now teams need to start scheduling stronger than they are. I originally thought this could be a four-bid conference this year with UConn, Cincinnati, Tulsa, and Temple, but I don't think we're going to see enough from Temple to get into the tournament. They actually have scheduled quite strong this year. They start off with North Carolina. A month later, they go to Madison to take on Wisconsin, and then they've got one of their annual Big Five showdowns with Villanova, which is actually during rivalry week on ESPN this year.
Nice.
But I don't see them winning any of those three. Maybe they steal one against Villanova, but not going to beat North Carolina. Very, very, very difficult for anyone to go to Madison and win. So that'll probably keep them out. If they can win two of those games, I don't see any reason why, if they have a solid conference season, this can't be a four-bid conference. But someone like Tulsa, they're going to have to really impress in conference play, which I think they will, because their strongest game out of conference is Wichita State at home. So that's their only game against a really, really legitimate program in outside of the American. So really, it's only the top four that are scheduling strong right now. Houston has LSU at home. They go to Rhode Island, but they're still a couple years away from competing. So we'll see what happens, but I think everyone across the board needs to start playing more tough games.
You know, it's interesting because for those basement teams, the American Athletic Conference schedule is the tough part. You know, whereas for us, it's the part that, you know, can't end, you know, more quickly, can't be over more quickly. But I would love, and I've never really seen it. I hadn't really seen it.
Is Ryan Archibald still there?
I think I have no idea.
He's like a 10th year senior now, right?
I have no idea, to be honest with you. I think he is. He definitely didn't go pro early.
No.
but you could argue that Villanova men's basketball has been the biggest beneficiary of conference realignment, because guess what? Everybody good left their conference. Everybody who was relevant and good left their conference. The conference got to keep its name, keep its so-called prestige, and then you go, oh, well, we won the Big East. We dominated the Big East. Look at us. Give us a one seed. Give us a two seed.
Yeah, but you know what? So did Providence. I just need to throw that out there. Providence won it, too.
Providence, they're not very good either.
No, that's they're not, the best player in the country, but...
we won the Big East. Oh, all it took was UConn, West Virginia, Syracuse, Pittsburgh, Notre Dame, Louisville, all leaving. And then it was easy.
I hate conference realignment.
Jesus. And then it was easy.
Yeah. Oh, my God. You know,
oh, my gosh.
I can't wait for... Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off. I can't wait
for the
showdown against Temple, because I think that Temple definitely... I shouldn't say that they're going to lose all three of those games. I think Temple definitely has a shot to knock them off. And if we're talking about the Big East, and as a fan of other people's misfortunes, I enjoy the opportunity for Providence, which is considered to have the best player in the country and is one of those teams who have won the Big East post-realignment. I can't wait for them to go to Kingston, Rhode Island this year and lose to Rhode Island's team, the URI Rams. I am high on them. I think they're a top 40 team this year, not just because my cousin goes there and I'm trying to get her more into college basketball. She's obsessed now. She loves the Rams. She loves E.C. Matthews, who's going to have a big season. This is a team that is going to take over Rhode Island, and they need to start playing UConn. We were talking about schedule strength. I think UConn could have done a lot better than Maine and New Hampshire, and they're playing Central again. They've got some really good teams at the top, but the bottom heaviness of that out-of-conference schedule is atrocious. Bring in a URI. Make that an annual game. Got to be done.
Yeah, I was looking at the non-conference schedule, and I was thinking to myself, there's a lot of Hockey East teams, actually, on the basketball schedule with UMass Lowell. We play Maine. We play UNH. We play BU. Wondering if that might not have been one of those secret handshake deals we made when we joined Hockey East over maybe some potentially other quote-unquote better hockey programs.
I really hope not, because this is such an atrocious bottom part of the non-conference schedule. I mean, yeah, you get Michigan to start the battle for Atlantis, maybe Syracuse after that, some more good teams down there. But then, you know, Maryland and Ohio State, Texas. But other than that, Central, UMass Lowell, Sacred Heart. Like, yeah, they're in school, they're in-state, they're easy to schedule. But even so, we've seen those in-state games don't really draw a lot of interest. Because everyone's a UConn fan. Central or a Sacred Heart fan if you went to Central or Sacred Heart, or you're some old person who lives in Milford or New Britain, and you're just all about the local team.
Yeah, but you got to have your cupcakes early on, because you can't burn yourself out and then head into the conference season and then go on a long run in two postseason tournaments, you know? So I think it's – with the teams you mentioned, you did say Michigan, Ohio State, Texas – maybe we get Syracuse, and there's four games. I mean, we want some cupcakes, you know? We want to demolish a couple teams
to demolish Yale.
Sometimes you don't demolish them when you should. That's a whole other story of a very disappointing team last year.
Although in 2014, didn't we have a really tough game against Harvard? Two of them, maybe?
Yeah, but Harvard's decent.
They are decent, but I mean, that's a team that won the national title. We literally won the national title, and we had a tough game against Harvard.
That was an NCAA tournament Harvard team.
Yeah, they've done some really good stuff over the last few years.
And their recruiting class this year is – the Harvard recruiting class is good, yeah. They had a four-star guy last year come in.
Yeah. Yale's the preseason favorite, but I think there's going to be a couple teams that could really impress.
That's all I'm saying is that Yale's not as horrible as we made them out to be. Also, that's all.
That's true.
It could be a decent team this year.
Yeah, but UConn gave that game away last year.
But we gave many games away last year. That's why we weren't a good team.
Gave away every game last.
That's
year.
Why we were not a good team in the end. You know, just giving
that
games away.
Must have been some secret charity week last year against Yale and Tech. Why are we talking about this? God damn it.
Exactly. Why?
I'm sorry.
Don't bring up that Texas game to me. Why do I have to see that now going in? The ugliest shot in Division I history. Swish.
What was a hell of an off-ball screen, though, on the inbound play.
Ugly. Yeah. Ugly shot.
We have a major announcement at the UConn blog. We are now getting social media savvy. We are on Instagram. So it's a very easy handle to remember, at the UConn blog. Go find us. We're going to be posting pictures from stories. Apparently it's not that easy to link to stories on Instagram. I don't understand that. But we'll put stuff up from games. We'll have photos. We'll have videos from press conferences. All that jazz. So give it a follow. We'll make it fun.
Yeah, and we have photographers actually going to many of the games, so definitely should be some really good stuff there. I've got a whole bunch of pictures that I take from practice and games and stuff, and I don't really know what to do with them. they don't belong in game stories, so we'll have some fun there on the Instagram, on the social media, and that's going to do it for us today at the UConn Pod. For Brenner and Tim, this is Amon. Thank you all for listening.